Today, Dr. Scott Thor is on the hot seat, and we are talking process improvement, we're talking finances, and I'm sure a whole host of other things. He brings a wealth of expertise, and I found this out, I don't know, a month or two ago as we started planning all of this. His best, by far his best quality, of all the things that Scott's going to bring to the table, he's a Nebraska Cornhusker fan, so you know he is of impeccable moral character and cannot fault in any way. I don't have his bio. So welcome, Dr. Juanita Webb, back to the show. Welcome, Dr. Scott Thor. Excited to have you on the hot seat. This is our 2021 Bakersfield Mastermind. Last week, we interviewed Dr. Webb as she talked about HR. So if you missed that last week, if you missed last week's broadcast, happened Tuesday at noon, you can go back and look at that. It's in my feed. I know they have both shared it. And today we are interviewing Dr. Scott Thor, a process improvement and financial wizard. And so, but Dr. Webb, would you please introduce yourself and then introduce Scott so we can start interviewing him?
Absolutely. Well, thanks so much again. I'm Juanita Webb, and I do have an HR consulting firm here in the Bakersfield area and service clients throughout the state and actually other states as well. Been doing this for many, many years, as has Scott, who's a very seasoned professional. Scott has over 20 years of experience helping leaders get more from their organizations and individuals to eliminate that, you know, that crippling debt. Now's a good time for us to all be thinking about debt, right? It's beginning of January. We got to start thinking about taxes and all of those kinds of things. And so Scott can help with that. He has clients that have implemented thousands of improvements that have led to 150 million plus in savings and eliminated over 500,000 hours of unnecessary work. I love that. Please help me eliminate unnecessary work. I would. Scott is a Dave Ramsey preferred financial coach, a certified Lean Six Sigma master black belt, and has a doctorate in management and a degree from George Fox University. So Scott, tell us a little bit more about you. What did we miss?
That was a good intro. Yeah, I am a Husker fan. I went to the University of Nebraska, and unfortunately, the last few years, yet I haven't been to any bowl games. It's I'm not sure what Nebraska are doing. I remember the days growing up there and going to college in Nebraska, and when they would lose one game, like that following Monday, would be like a day of mourning. Like,
yeah.
In your family college, you know, one game. Now, if they could just, you know, win about two or three games, we'd be happy. Yeah, no, that's a great intro. So my passion is just helping people, you know, in their personal lives, in their work lives, find ways to enjoy their work more and to, you know, eliminate the debt that is really having a negative effect on people. And this, what's happening with the pandemic right now has actually really highlighted the need to be more intentional with your finances. And when you have, you know, financial hard times, losing a job, maybe having hours cut, I'm working with lots of people like that that have found themselves in a spot where they probably shouldn't be if they would have done a better job planning. So look forward to sharing today.
Absolutely. Excited to have you. One of the first financial lessons that I learned from my dad is, well, maybe not one of the first, but one of the ones I remember the most. I was in college and I came home and my parents had stuff happen in their private life. And dad goes, you know, I decided that they always say that making your first million is the hardest you ever have to make, and that was too hard, so I'm just going to move on and start making my second and see if it's any easier. I don't know how that's working for him, but I think that we all have lots of questions about finances, and particularly with what we've come through in 2020 and what we're facing in 2021. Juanita certainly tackled the HR aspect of that, so to tackle process improvement, to tackle personal finance, which bleeds into business finance. I have a feeling you're going to talk in a little bit about how those two relate to each other, because we know they do. But let me get started again. Like last week, I'm going to pop up questions onto the screen so that as you join our live feed, you can see the questions we're asking. But if you have a comment that you want to submit, because we are streaming this live around the world on a bunch of different platforms, if you have a question that you want to get asked, go ahead and submit that in the comments down below, and we will get to those and ask Scott at the end, and he can take some rapid-fire questions at the end. But to start with, Scott, the one I wanted to get answered, is, as this process improvement and financial coach, How is it that you manage to focus on these multiple specialties? It feels like there's probably a connection between the two, and can you walk us through that a bit more?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's kind of in many ways, it was an accidental collision. Like if we back up and I share a little bit more about my story growing up, I grew up in Nebraska and in Green Bay, so I'm a Packers fan too. So I guess I got something good to cheer about here with the Packers being in the playoffs, but not so much with my Huskers. But growing up in Nebraska, went to school. I was a poor student my whole life until I got out of high school and actually flunked the seventh grade. And when I got into high school, I really had a very poor academic performance, except for one area, the industrial arts. And industrial arts is just like welding, like metal shop and wood shop. That was like one area that I actually excelled at. And I still remember super vividly to this day a conversation I had with my guidance counselor, a guy named Mr. Rotella, who was a math teacher and a wrestling coach. And we were having a conversation about my future. It was my senior year. I graduated from high school in 1989. And Mr. Rotella said to me, hey, Scott, you know, maybe you should think about a career working with your hands, because if you depend on your mind, you're probably going to starve to death. You know, and so, you know, in 2021, I could have probably retired by suing the school district for a comment like that, right? But back in 1989, I actually agreed with them. I still kind of do to some degree. It was like, okay, Mr. Rotella, you know, that's some good advice. And so I went to school for welding. I went to a little community college in a small town in Milford, Nebraska, and got a degree in welding. And more importantly, what I realized during that time was that I wasn't an idiot. I actually got good grades. If I would actually apply myself to something I had passion for, like welding, I could actually excel. And so I got out of welding school, started working as a welder, working a graveyard shift, and realized within about a year or so, like, maybe I'm not, you know, welding isn't really something I'm super passionate about anymore. It's hot, it's dirty. And so I went back to school while I was still working. And went back to the University of Nebraska while I was working full time as a welder, and graduated and became a manufacturing engineer. And that's really where my process improvement career started. Like, I always had thoughts about process improvement while I was welding. I mean, you've got nothing to do but think about the work you're doing, but I wasn't in a position, at least in the company I was working at, to actually make any improvements. I was paid to just drop my helmet and weld, and that was it. I was getting paid for my hands, but not for my mind. I was actually living out what Mr. Rotella told me to do. And then I became an engineer and worked for a company in South Dakota and eventually moved to Ohio and was an engineer out there as well. And that's when I got introduced to process improvement. And at that point in time, I really started to realize that I wanted to do more, and got my master's degree, came out here to California, and met my wife, who was a physician here in Bakersfield. And at that point, we were both really successful in our careers and making tons of money, but really didn't have anything to show for it except for a ton of debt. I had also, in the meantime, got my doctoral degree. And so at that point, I realized that, hey, I need to do something different. So I got online, started searching for ways to get out of debt, and came across Dave Ramsey. And didn't know anything about Dave Ramsey before this, and started to listen to his radio show, which I think he's got about 20 million listeners every week to his radio show, where people just call in and tell him about their money problems, their life problems. And what really inspired me was these debt-free screams. Like, he's got it's a three-hour show, and once an hour, people come on to the show, and they tell their story about how much debt they had. Usually they share what their income is and how long it took them to pay off the debt. And then he's always got kind of the same questions, what'd you do to get out of debt? And so these stories just really inspired me, where they would scream, I'm debt-free, we're debt-free. And I thought, hey, we have less debt than a lot of these people do, and we've got way bigger incomes, and we should be able to do this. And so we did. We paid everything off. We bought a house. We paid that off, and eventually became debt-free millionaires. And at that point is when I really started to do more consulting, more coaching as a process improvement coach. And just through that work, I just started to hear about people's lives as I got to know them and the work I was doing with them. And many of them had financial issues. And so it was really at that point when we were out of debt, it was like, hey, how can I start to use these talents I have with coaching people to help them succeed and to feel the freedom that we have by being out of debt? And also over the course of time, I really realized that all businesses, all organizations, whether they're for-profit or non-profit, are really exactly the same in that they're just people and processes. Like every organization everywhere in the world is just people and processes doing something to deliver a product or a service. And there's no perfect people, there's no perfect processes. So I love that about process improvement. It's like job security. Like until there's perfect people and perfect processes, guys like me, gals like me, that do the kind of work I do, are going to have plenty of work to do. And so it was just kind of through just this natural equation of doing process improvement and being a consultant, and I really call myself a coach and a consultant, and then hearing people's stories about their financial problems, and then my wife and I getting out of debt, that, you know, the two have just kind of naturally come together. And so now I kind of look at my life as like I've had a lot of success. I've got stacks of degrees and certificates and money in the bank. And the best thing that money has done for me, as it does for my clients, is given me freedom to do what I want to do, not what I have to do. So oftentimes that's the thing that money can buy you, is actually freedom to do what you want to do, not what you have to do. So now my real passion is I've kind of shifted from focusing on success. And many of you have probably gotten to this point in your life. If you're like me, I'm 50. I turned 50 this past year. And if you haven't gotten to this point yet, you probably will at some point, where you have a bunch of success and you get to a point when you ask, now what? Like, what do I do now? I've got enough money in the bank that I don't really need to work as much as I'm working. I've got, you know, family, a great wife. I have a career. I got all this stuff, you know, that we, you know, typically label as successful people, the big house and all the good things, which are great. But now what do I do? And what I just came to realize is that now I'm shifting my focus on significance. Like, how can I help other people find success? That's kind of the place I am with my career now, with process improvement and financial coaching, is really helping people find the success that I've had. And then for me personally, it's more about significance, leaving something behind for them to build on. And hopefully someday they'll come to that point too, because you likely will. If you're successful, you're going to get to the point where you're going to be like, I got all this money, I got, you know, the degrees, the family, all the stuff that our society tells us is important, and you're going to still feel empty, that there's still something more. So the two stories kind of came together by accident in many ways.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned, Scott, a couple times in there talking about, you know, people and processes. Is there some connection about how employee financial problems have an impact on an organization's performance?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yep, for sure. One quick example. Let me tell you about a lady I talked to last week. Her name's Rachel, and she's an engineer. And she makes $90,000 a year, real good salary. She's, I think, in her mid-30s. But the problem is she's got $100,000 in student loan debt. She's got $600 car payment, which is very typical. I think right now the average car payment in America is about $600 over the course of 84 months. She's got $20,000 in debts, credit card debt, and no savings. Like, and I hear these stories all the time. It doesn't make any sense, right? How can somebody make $90,000 a year? She doesn't have any kids. She doesn't own a house, have no money in savings. And all of this, she told me during this coaching session while she was at work. You know, so right there's a problem that productivity suffers. You know, when you have financial issues, productivity suffers at work. And even some studies even suggest that those with financial issues will spend up to, I believe it's 20 hours a month dealing with personal financial issues, things that work like dealing with creditors or trying to figure out ways to refinance their debt, thinking that's going to solve the problem. And probably the worst thing of all is that they're spending a lot of their time looking for another job, thinking that, hey, the solution to my problem is I just need to make more money, which is almost never the solution. That's never really addressing the root cause. And the statistics are really kind of sad that about 80% of Americans, it's probably higher now. I haven't seen anything during the pandemic released yet, but before the pandemic, it's probably higher now. But about 80% of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. And about 40% of U.S. households can't cover or pay cash for a $400 emergency. So if you think the average American business, where most people are working paycheck or living paycheck to paycheck and have no money in the bank, it's not hard to believe that financial issues are going to cause, you know, or have a negative impact on business performance for sure.
Yeah. And you're absolutely right. And I hear that, you know, as an HR professional, I hear that from companies, you know, my employees are so distracted. What's going on? Why are they, you know, not paying attention? Well, a lot of it could be that these financial issues that they're experiencing, you know, are causing those problems. So thanks. Great.
Yeah. And I know one of the things that, like one of the sayings that Dave Ramsey often mentions is like, you know, you make too much money to be this broke. And I think that's a common place for a lot of people to be. So since we're on that topic, what can employers do to help with some of those employee financial challenges?
Yeah, there's a number of things that they can do. I think the very first thing is they can realize that employee financial problems are going to become their problems if they don't do something about it. Like, you know, just kind of burying their head in the sand and saying, hey, that's their problem. I'm paying them fairly. They need to figure out how to better manage their finances, which is true, but their money problems of their employees are going to become their problems. So they've got to realize that first of all. And I think one approach to dealing with this is to develop a financial well-being program that helps employees behave better with their money, which is one of the root causes to the problem. And the root problem, or the root of the problem, is almost never employees making enough money. Like, very rarely do I have people come to me that just aren't making enough money. The problem is that employees fail to plan how to best use the money that they do have. Kind of like the old adage, I think, says that failing to plan is planning to fail. And so the well-being program that I prescribe, that's been used by millions of people to get out of debt, it's basically following Dave Ramsey's baby steps. Starts with the first baby step, which is saving $1,000. It's like a baby emergency fund or a starter emergency fund. And one of the reasons why people find themselves buried in debt is because they don't have any savings. So like that engineer I was just telling you about, you know, if she were to have an issue to go to the emergency room, or to fix a, you know, leaking radiator in her car, that's going to lead to them racking up this debt on high interest credit cards because that they have no savings. What are they going to do? They put it on a high interest credit card, or even worse, payday loans, which are, you know, can be up to 1,000%. Like, you think those payday loan places are only being used by folks that are really, really, really poor and desperate? But I work with people that are highly educated, have master's degrees, and that they find like that's their only solution is to go to one of these payday lenders. And the second step is providing guidance to employees on how to create a plan for their money each month so that they can not only begin to build that emergency savings, but also give every dollar an assignment each month. Because the key to really being successful with your finances is paying off debt. So you've got to be more intentional because on average, I would say most employees can be free of all of their non-mortgage debt in about 2 years or less. On average, those folks following this program, it takes about 2 years and all the non-mortgage debt is gone. But what's even more exciting is that in 7 years on average, most, if they continue on this process, will pay off the mortgage. So if you can imagine, if you're a business owner, if you could imagine your business where most of your employees have no debt, you know, what would that do to their performance? You know, where is their focus going to be? It's going to be probably more on their work and on their customers. So to summarize, it's just, you know, developing a well-being program, kind of like we have well-being programs for our physical health. We can use the same concept with our finances to help employees save a little bit and be more intentional with their money. And that's something that I do, is help organizations put together those well-being programs.
Yeah, excellent. Thank you. I know even recently, so my wife and I bought a house last year in the summer, sold one house and bought another. And it wasn't but a few weeks ago, actually over the Christmas holiday, that we had a water emergency pop up and we had a water leak that we had to fix. And thank goodness we had that $1,000 emergency fund, right? And so it was just kind of easy to say, well, here's this unexpected bill. Hey, look, it's fixed by the end of the same day. And we, you know, we're up and running again. And so we're kind of like exposed to this world and following it through. But for maybe those employees, those people that are maybe just getting started with, you mentioned the first couple of steps, but even that first step of saving that $1,000 for that emergency fund can feel overwhelming, right? That's a big number. It's got a comma in it. If I'm backwards on finances, I can't do that. What can those employees do to, like, where do I start to find that money and begin that journey?
Yeah, there's one thing that you can do is come to my webinar next week, or the 26th actually of this month. I'm going to be having a webinar at noon on the 26th. I think it's a Tuesday. And you can check my Facebook site for a link to sign up. If you just search for Cornerstone Coaching in Bakersfield, you'll find my website or my Facebook site to sign up for the webinar. And the webinar really gets at what I consider four keys to financial success, four things that I see will help people be more successful with their finances. I've seen this work in my personal life and also with my clients. And number one is to start slow and don't make any drastic changes in your lifestyles, because what I often find is that's one of the reasons why people struggle with finances when they finally do get excited about making changes in their life and taking control of their finances and being more intentional. They get overly anxious, they cut everything out of their budget, Netflix, Hulu, going to Starbucks, and it's such a radical change to their lifestyle that unless you're going to be out of debt in like, you know, 2 or 3 months, you know, you can probably hammer through that short period of time. Most people, it's, you know, 2 or 3 years. That's a long time to go, at least it would be for me to be without Netflix, Hulu, and those kinds of things. So it's number one is to just start slow. Don't make any changes. In fact, I tell clients the first 2 to 4 months, your goal is just to simply create a plan, a budget you can live on that mimics your current lifestyle, because then you can convince yourself through this process that, hey, I can actually create a plan and stick to it, you know, and once you can do that, then you can start to attack your debt and start to trim your budget a little bit. Kind of look at this from like a marathon runner's perspective. You know, getting out of debt is kind of like running a marathon, and if you ask marathon runners, what is one of the keys to success? They will usually tell you it's about finding the right cadence, because if you start too fast, I did this a few years back when I ran a half marathon, and I started way too fast my first race ever, and actually my last, now that I think of it. And within like a mile, I was like out of breath. I was out of gas. It was all uphill one way and all downhill the other way, so that probably didn't help either. But if you ask marathon runners, they'll tell you, like, figure out what's the right cadence and then stick to that. And the great thing about that is once you get close to the finish line, just like you watch marathon runners, they don't slow down usually when they get near the finish line. They actually speed up. And I kind of see that with clients often too, is they start slow and they ramp up where they can maintain for, you know, whatever time it is to take them to get out of debt. And then when they get within about 6 months of the finish line of getting out of debt, they just throw everything at it because they know, okay, in 6 months or whatever, I'm going to be over the finish line and then I can relax and it's only temporary. So that's number one, start slow. Number two is you get more by doing less, you know, and this is kind of the opposite of what most people think, is most people think, hey, if I do more, I'll get more, but almost always if you do more, you get less. So it's really about getting more by doing less and focusing on just a few vital behaviors, such as creating the monthly spending plan or budget, and then tracking performance against that plan once a week. So the second piece of advice I have is, what are the most critical behaviors that will lead to success? And number one is having a plan, because if you don't have a plan, you can wander into debt, but you can't wander into wealth. You got to have a plan. And number two is occasionally you got to check against the plan. It's like many of us are watching the playoffs right now in football. You know, every quarter the teams are looking at the scoreboard to see how's it going. Do we need to make any changes? Are we winning? Are we going? Is it going according to plan? It's the same with our personal finances. So that's number two. And then number three is keep it simple, because most people don't love to budget. You know, I've not worked with too many people that have told me, you know, Scott, I love putting a budget together, probably because if they did, they wouldn't be coming to people like me, right? And usually I have heard a few people tell me that they like budgeting, and I tell them, you're weird. I just have to tell you are weird in a good way. But most people don't like the budget. So what do we do when we know what we have to do is something we don't like to do? You know, like budgeting. Like, nobody's ever told me, like, no, I don't like the budget, and I don't think it's important to, you know, being good with my finances. You know, I can do it without a budget. I've not heard that. People know that a budget is one of the only ways to get out of debt and be intentional with your finances, even if you're out of debt. So how do we make it simpler? We use technology. So one of the things I do with my clients is I have them use an app, and there's plenty of apps out there. I just happen to use one called Every Dollar that allows you to connect your bank accounts to the app, which works on your computer as well. So you can create your budget, which once you create one budget, it's basically copy and paste month to month. Not too much changes in our typical finances from month to month. But most importantly, it allows you to connect it to all your accounts, all your financial institutions. So you can see every single transaction, and every one of those you can drag into whatever category it goes into. Like, say, after you go to the grocery store, and you can see in your real time, hey, how am I doing? It's kind of like we're checking the score. And it allows you to be more likely to be successful in focusing on those vital behaviors. So that's number three. It's simple. And then the last one is to seek help to speed up the process, because that's the reason most people hire me as a financial coach, is that they've read all the books, they've watched the YouTube videos, they've listened to Dave Ramsey's show and others like Dave, but they still have not had success, or their success is moving very slowly. And so by hiring a coach or asking for help, I tell folks, like, that is a sign of strength. Like, when you know you need help and you ask for it, that's a sign of weakness. When you know you need help and you ask for it, that's a sign of strength. So that's the fourth thing, is to get help with someone like me that can help you get across the finish line faster. So to start slow, get more by doing less, keep it simple, use technology, and then seek help when you need it. Those are probably the four most important things employees, anybody can do to better deal with their financial challenges.
Well, that's great, Scott. And that's really helpful to kind of understand that there's a process that they can use, right? And that kind of leads us into the conversation about process improvement, the other side that you do some coaching on. You know, there's been a lot of talk recently about agile management and Kanban boards and Scrum and all of those kinds of theories out there, but talk really about what is process management and how you would describe it, and then maybe what we can do in a business with it.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that's right. Like, process improvement, most people think about all those things you just talked about, Juanita, Agile, Scrum, Lean Six Sigma, Lean. There's a bunch of different tools in the Lean Six Sigma or the process improvement toolbox. And too often people think about process improvement from a tools and a techniques perspective. And I think that that's okay. We need the tools. But for me, it really starts with the mindset. It's when I go and I meet with a client or a potential client, I tell every single one of them, my goal for you, and hopefully your goal as well, is to change the way you think about work, to change the way you look at your work. Because most people, when they look at their work, it's just like it's a job description, it's a list of tasks. And if you want to stay average, that's a great way to do it. Just have employees come to work every day and just do their job. And that's it. That's a great way to stay average. But if you really want to be above average, you need to work on the mindset of your employees. And that's something I stole from Jack Welch, who was the CEO and chairman of GE back in the day when GE was a super successful company. His motto was a new day, a better way. And that's something that's kind of stuck with me over the years, that I try to instill in every client, to say, like, this all starts, process improvement is all about changing the way people think about their work, so that maybe 90% of their time is spent doing their actual work, doing an awesome job for their customers, the people they serve, the reason they're there, the customers that they're working with. But then the other 10% of their time is spent thinking about a new day, a better way. How can I do this faster? How can I do this better? And then the tools can help with that. So it's really about the mindset. I think process improvement is really not about the tools. It's about changing the way people think about their work. But then when you break it down into the actual like nuts and bolts of process improvement, it's really about two things. It's about getting faster and getting better at hopefully what you love to do. And you get faster by getting rid of things that customers don't care about. Things like waiting, like ask your customer the next time you interact with them, you know, hey, do you like to wait? You know, and if they tell you that they like to wait, there's probably something wrong with them, unless they're, you know, you're giving you a discount or they're waiting. But most people don't like to wait for anything. Like we've got Amazon 2 days now, and that's too much for us. You know, it's going to get to the point where 2 hours isn't going to be acceptable. So waiting is a huge form of waste. And so that's one of the kind of the core components of the tools is like, how can we find ways to have less waiting in the process? In fact, this is something that I've helped Kern County with, our own county here with, to implement almost 200. I think they've got about 200 improvement projects now, saving close to $20 million of our taxpayer money and eliminating, I think it's over 100,000 hours of work that they found to be non-value added. In other words, work that was being done that wasn't really important, that the customer didn't care about. And that 100,000 hours of work is worth about 50 full-time employees. So I find oftentimes that's one of the reasons why organizations embrace process improvement, like our county government is like, hey, we need to get more work done, but we can't hire more people. Well, how do you do that? Well, you look at the work you're currently doing and figure out, like, what could we stop doing? What are we doing that has no value? And just a simple example, like Kern County here, they've found, you know, 100,000 hours a year that's been eliminated, which is just like getting 50 free employees. And one of the things I've done working with Kern is I worked on an interesting project with the Beale Library, the big library downtown, our biggest library in the county, to minimize the time it takes a book to go from when you drop it off in the bin out in front of the library or inside the library to getting it back on the shelf. That actually took, or used to take, 14 days, 2 weeks, like 2 weeks to take a book and put it back on the shelf, which you might say, well, that sounds about right for government, right? Well, that's true of any organization I've worked with. Most organizations are actually no worse than our county government. In fact, our county government is better in many ways than many world-class organizations I've worked with. But it was actually like 10 minutes worth of work. But when this team came together, which is a big part of process improvement, a team coming together and mapping out the process, it wasn't just pick the book up, put it on the shelf. It was pick the book up, put it on a cart, wheel it in, take it out of the cart, put it on a shelf, put it on some other cart, move it over here, move it over there. And finally, 14 days later, it's back on the shelf. So they looked at all that and found ways to streamline that process and get it down to 2 days. So that's really the faster piece of it when you get to the nuts and bolts part of it. And then the other side is the better part of it. So once you're faster, what's left behind, you want to find ways to do it more consistently. And so really to summarize what process improvement is beyond the mindset, which I think is the big part of it, it's just ultimately getting faster and better at what you love to do, what you love to do for your clients and your customers. And it's about the mindset, but then the tools are there to support. How do I take that mindset and put it into action?
Yeah, that's great. So obviously, I mean, you've mentioned that it would save hours, which obviously equates to time. What are some other reasons maybe that organizations should implement process improvement? You know, besides just the financial piece of it for the organization, what else contributes to a more successful organization from a process improvement perspective?
Yeah, that's a good one, Edie, right? Because I think most would answer that it's money, it's to save money. But I've just kind of found over the years that money is really kind of a poor motivator for most people and most organizations to implement process improvement, because most of the people that I work with realize there's a benefit in saving money. They know that whether it's for profit or nonprofit, that money, you know, is important. The financial components of a business are important to be successful. But it's not on the top of their mind when they come to work most days. Like, think about this, anybody listening or watching. How often do you wake up in the morning, go to work thinking about, oh, all this money I'm going to save today, or all this money I'm going to make today, or all this new revenue I'm going to generate? Most people just don't think that way, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's, money is just kind of comes along for a free ride when you get faster and better with what you do. And the real, one of the main reasons I think employees or organizations should implement is, I'm getting some feedback there.
Yeah,
Yeah, let me see. Oh, there we go. That's better. Yeah, so one of the main reasons I think companies should, organizations should implement process improvement is to improve engagement in the organization. And for those of you that don't know what engagement means, a simple little test is basically you're an engaged employee, so to speak, if on most days when you wake up, you look forward to going to work. So a simple little test I give clients often is take a post-it note and write on one half of the post-it note, I'm looking forward to going to work, draw a line down the middle, and on the other half, right, I'd rather stay home, and stick that somewhere. You're going to see it every day for about 2 weeks and check off each day as you get up and head to work. What do I feel like? Would I rather stay home today or would I rather go to work? And within about 2 weeks, you'll get a sense of how engaged you are in your work. And a quick tip there too is if you would rather stay home most days, make sure that post, it's not somewhere your boss could see it. But that is ultimately like how you define engagement. Is you want to go to work most days. Like nobody wants to go to work every day. That's not realistic. But the sad truth is that only about 30% of Americans are engaged in their work. And I would guess, I haven't seen any recent statistics since the pandemic, but I'm guessing it's probably maybe gone down a little bit during the pandemic. And 70% of people would rather stay home most days, which makes sense to many people when you think about, man, that's maybe why I've got such lousy customer service everywhere I go, or why things take longer than they should, or why I've got problems with the products and services I buy. So engagement, what I've just found, I did my doctoral dissertation research on this about 10 years ago, is that one of the reasons why people aren't engaged in their work is because of all the problems they have at work. Like most people don't get up in the morning and say to themselves, you know, I can't wait to get to the office and deal with all the problems I've got waiting for me. Man, isn't that going to be a lot of fun, right? No. If that's you, you probably need professional help. That's not normal. Most people just want to come to work and do the work that they love to do and have few problems. And so process improvement can help in that process of minimizing problems to increase engagement. And what makes it even more I guess more enticing is that we spend as adults 2/3 of our adult life at work. So if you think about it, if you're disengaged, if you're like one of those 70% of people, you're going to spend 2/3 of your life somewhere you'd rather not be. That sounds like a really good definition of misery to me. So for me, the best reason to implement is just to create more smiles on your face, on the face of your coworkers, on the face of your customers, and maybe most importantly, your family. Because if you want a better life, you know, just simply strive to come home from work more often with a smile on your face, because a smile is infectious. And so that in the last probably 2 to 3 years, my approach for working with potential clients and why should they do this is become like 99% about engagement, creating more joy at work, because then the money and all the stuff that leaders care about that they're being measured on will just kind of come along for a free ride. Because if people want to come to work most days and they love what they do, they're going to be much better at it. It's going to rub off on other employees, and it's going to rub off on customers, which is going to rub off on all those metrics that we use to measure business by.
Yeah, great. Thank you. You know, as you were talking about that last portion, I kind of had two thoughts, and everybody will get to hear a bit more about this on Thursday when you guys are interviewing me. But I think even Juanita, from your perspective, that's one of the great things about this business mastermind is we're all going to talk about employee engagement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And at the same time, it's going to have other outcomes. Right. And so we're going to talk about, and then you mentioned creating smiles. Kind of hard to do while you're wearing a mask, at least when you smile at other people. But it doesn't mean they're not necessary, because I can tell when I smile, right? And so maybe right now we have that superficial smile that's needed.
We should all have our masks.
Yeah. But Scott, thank you for being on the hot seat today and providing some insight into what it looks like to be part of to run your own process improvement business, to help people get out of debt, but also just to share your heart and your passion. And I am sure that people will have either watched this live, we have people pop in and out, which is the case as they take their lunch break, but people will watch this on replay, right? We're going to continue to push this out, and they're going to get to the end of this and say, this is great, how do I get in touch with you? So go ahead and give us your contact information.
Yeah, so there's really two ways. I mean, probably the best way is just to give me a call or a text, and you can call me at 661-204-9448, or you can just simply email me at scott@cornerstonecoachingllc.com.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Webb, for joining us. Thank you, Scott, for being on the hot seat. And I gave Anita the platform to end last week. It's now your turn. So in the final 30 seconds, minute of this broadcast, however long you take, give us where you're at, what's on your heart, and give us a word of wisdom to encourage us as we go through this week.
Did you ask that for me? Oh, okay. Yeah, so this week, well, one way to inspire you is that I tell everybody I talk to probably, you know, maybe 10 to 20 people every week about their personal finances and thinking about getting a coach. And every single person I tell or I talk to, I tell them you can claim victory today, right now, because you are thinking about making a change in your life. You are thinking about becoming intentional with your finances. And that's the first step. Once you start thinking about it, you'll start reaching out to people like me and doing something about it, which will turn into action. So my words of wisdom are that, hey, if you're thinking about making a change in your life, if you're thinking about taking control of your finances, being intentional with your finances, if you're like my wife and I were at one time saying, like, we make too much money to be this broke, that's a good first step, because now you're thinking about it and you're likely to do something about it. Doesn't necessarily mean you need a coach, but I would just say claim victory that you have started to think about it, and hopefully shortly you'll start to take action. And just talk to people about it. I think that's one of the things I've just learned over the years, is that when you share the struggles that you're going through, and just count down your street, like I'm looking out my window here, and if my neighborhood is typical of anybody else's neighborhood, 7 out of 10 of these houses are living paycheck to paycheck, you know. And so what you see on social media is not reality. You know, people aren't showing on social media, hey, I just filed bankruptcy. Or, hey, we just lost the house today. That's not real. That's reality in many cases, but it's not showing up on social media. So don't get distracted by what you see online, because that's not true to what's actually happening behind the scenes. I talk to people every single day that on the outside, they look very successful. They drive a very nice car. They've got a very nice house, a great career, family, kids, the whole thing. But they got no money in the bank, and that's going to cause a lot of stress. But claim victory today, because you're starting to think differently about it, and that's going to lead to action.
Excellent. Thank you, Scott. Thank you, Juanita. We will see you guys actually back on Thursday at noon, where you guys will be able to do this one more time. So thank you, guys. Have a great rest of your day.